Hello, everybody. This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour, and we're going live again tonight. You know, whenever I'm out of town, it's all in the archives, but this is live. We are still having the authors on here that are going to be at our Metaphysical Conference in a few weeks. So those are the ones I've been having for my guests. But before we get started, I want to give out the toll-free number that anybody can call if they want to call in and talk to me or our guest tonight. This is the new number they said they have now. It's 1-888-815-9756. 1-888-815-9756. And as I told you before, we're having our fourth transformational conference from in June 12th to the 14th in Bentonville, Arkansas. We've got a new venue that is out by the airport, and it's much bigger, and we have a lot more room for vendors if anybody else wants to call in, to call the office, not on here, to call the office and see about being a vendor. But we're expecting a huge crowd at this conference. So every week until we go on, I've been having the speakers. Now, Sherry was not originally, my guest tonight, Sherry, is not originally scheduled to be on the conference because her book hasn't been published yet by our company. But we had a cancellation, so we asked her if she'd come in a little early. I usually don't want them on in the conference until the book is out, but, you know, best laid plans. Okay, but our guest tonight is Sherry Courtland. And she has written the book called Windows of Opportunity. And that's what we're going to be discussing tonight is her book. And she'll be one of the speakers at the conference in 2 weeks. Okay, Sherry, you're there, aren't you?
I'm here.
Okay, I don't want you to leave me.
Okay.
All right. Like I said, we weren't expecting to have to do all these things for a few more months. Because the book is, we haven't even got it ready to go to the printers yet.
I know. But I think it's a window of opportunity.
Just what the book says, you never know. But we had a cancellation, and so we were kind enough to step in with this.
Oh, I'm happy. I'm happy to be here tonight, and I'm happy to be in Arkansas with you next month.
Okay. Well, what I usually do when I start out with one of these shows, I always want you to tell everybody about you. I want to know what you do, your background and everything.
Ah, okay. So, well, my background business-wise or metaphysically?
Well, just tell us about your life, you know, your background. Because you said, I think, in the letters that you were a very unlikely type person to be writing a metaphysical book.
Well, I did not plan to write this book, and I didn't want to write this book. I wrote this book kicking and screaming. I started back in the, I would say, the mid-80s on a personal search for the truth. I wanted to know why we were here, why all this suffering, why did we have to endure it, what was the point of it. I just didn't get the point of it all, and so I started my personal search. And then in 1989, I was taking a psychic development class in upstate New York, and that's when I started to do automatic writing. I had been trying to do that for a while at home. Wasn't really happening for me. And one night I was in this class, and the teacher announced, well, tonight we're going to do automatic writing. And I was just kind of laughing and making fun and saying, oh, that's not going to happen for me. I've been trying to do that for months. And as I was saying these things, I felt something literally grab onto my arm, and all of a sudden my arm started to move and move and move. And I'm doing all these circles and circles and circles, and from across the room, the teacher, the instructor, Cindy, yells over, take control, take control. And I'm yelling, take control of what? I don't know how to take control. The whole class was watching me. I was watching my arm going. I didn't know what to do. And did that for a while, and then eventually I learned to control it, and I started to converse with my main guide, Jeremy, and then other guides started to come through. They all had their individual bits of wisdom and knowledge that they wanted to pass through. And then it was around 2004, I was minding my own business, taking down my dictation every day, and And all of a sudden, the guide said to me, "We're going to write a book." And I thought, "Write a book? Okay, sure. How do you want to do that?" You know. And they said, "Well, you know, we're going to do it. All you have to do is just sit there." And we did it on the computer. And I
That's easier than writing it with a pen, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, yes. And you know, and the funny thing, Dolores, is I said to them when they said they wanted to write a book, I said, "Okay, but it better be on the computer because I'm thinking of my hands. How am I ever going to write all of that?"
But you know, let's go back a little bit. Tell people what you do for a living, because that's why you said this is very unlikely that this was something you would have started to do.
Well, I'm the director of specialty sales for a very large timeshare company. And before that, I was in the insurance business, and I did a little bit in educational theater also. So in timesharing, you don't really sit and talk to people about talking with spirits or doing automatic writing or that kind of thing. It doesn't really go along with sales. So
it's really the corporate world is where you're coming from then,
absolutely,
aren't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes.
So that's what I mean. It's not something that you said you were a little worried about your career even if you wrote a book like this.
Well, you know, the conference that I'm going to be speaking at is really when I'm going to be coming out of the metaphysical closet, so to speak. Announcing to the world that, yes, I do speak to spirit. I do automatic writing. I'm in contact with the other side. I almost came out of the closet several years ago. I was taking herbology classes with Rosemary Gladstar. I was working on my ND at the Clayton College of Natural Health. And I was talking to people. I was talking to my friends and telling them what I was doing. And then one person that I worked with, I decided that she didn't really like the things that I was doing, and I was up for a promotion. I lost that promotion. I was up for another one. I lost that. It wasn't until a year later that I found out that she was kind of twisting the things that I was doing around and making people believe that I was into voodoo and crazy stuff and even animal sacrifice.
Speaking with the devil and all of that.
Exactly, exactly. Nothing could be further from the truth, but they thought, well, you know, she sounds crazy, so we don't really want to promote her. And when I heard the things that were said, I can understand why they didn't want to promote me. And at that point, I kind of made a decision to just kind of pull my foot back into the closet and stay there for a while. And when they said write a book, I took the notes, Dolores. I did everything that I said that I would do, took them all, and then I sat them in a drawer, and I wasn't doing anything at all with them. And then I called a psychic that I had met in Sedona just to kind of get a feel for where I should be, and the first words out of his mouth were, "It's time for you to accept that you are one of the so-called weirdos and get on with this project." And I thought, well...
Welcome to the world of weirdos.
I know. And for him to use that word weirdo, because that was the word that was always been in my head. I don't want to be seen as being weird. I lost a promotion. Well, you know, I'm sure you went through the same stuff.
Oh, yeah. And that's what this new BBS radio, they all deal with weirdos. Just about every post on this radio show, that's all they talk about. So it's kind of like a metaphysical radio station.
Yeah.
So everybody out there listening, I think, can identify with you totally.
Well, you know what? The psychic told me that I would be in great company.
Oh, yes, because the metaphysical world is a wonderful world. And I think you're going to have some skeptics. I've had those, too, in all of my career. But the majority of people that are into this, and it is growing, too. The field is really growing. The majority of people that are into this are very loving people. And they want to explore. They want to learn. So I don't think you're going to be in very good company.
I think I'm going to be, too. And, you know, I think back on some of the pioneers that even before you, Ruth Montgomery and Shirley MacLaine, and, I mean, they had great jobs. They had lots of money. They really didn't do this to make money. They kind of risked their reputations to go out there and talk about these topics. And I thought, well, you know, if they're out there doing this and jeopardizing their careers and people are calling them strange and weird and everybody's heard the crazy Shirley MacLaine jokes, they have to be credible. There has to be a reason why they're out there talking about this. And so they were kind of my role models for coming mm-hmm. out.
And because it comes a time where they say you got to walk your talk. You finally have to talk and write about what you really believe in. You can't hide it any longer.
Absolutely. And it became so hard to not go out and do something. And, you know, it's funny, too, because when I took the notes out and then I started to put them in order for the book, I thought, well, okay, I'll make this into a book. But I never, ever thought that I would find a publisher.
Well, whenever you sent it to us, had you sent it to any other publishers before that?
I only sent it to 6 publishers, and I got the loveliest turndowns that I've ever read, rejection letters. And then I got that telephone call from you. It was on a Sunday afternoon. And actually, I looked at the telephone, and I have a condo that we rent out. And I thought that it was someone calling about the condo. And I wondered, why is this person who's calling me about the condo asking me about my book? How does she know that I wrote a book?
Well, I'll tell you, you didn't have as long of a hard road as I did trying to get published. But when I started out, it's been 30 years ago, there wasn't any New Age stores. There wasn't any New Age literature out there. I was way ahead of my time.
Oh, I know it.
They had like maybe one shelf in a normal bookstore. They might have had a few books like this. But it took 9 years for me to find a first publisher.
That's a long time.
I went through every kind of heartbreak and every obstacle that a writer could go through. Everything. I had absolutely everything that could possibly happen to a writer. But I know now it was my testing time. They were giving me a chance. You can back out if you want. You know, this is your last chance. Because once you make a commitment, then you're stuck. And that was what that was for in there. You know, give me a chance. I could get out if I wanted. And, oh, I had my heart broken so many times. And there were times I just wanted to throw the manuscript against the wall and just say it hurts too much, I can't do it.
Absolutely.
But then it was like, okay, what else do you want to do then? Because you have a choice here. And then I said, all I want to do is write. So, okay, so then I sat down and started another book. So by the time I found a publisher, I had 5 books already written.
5 books.
And then it was like, you know, I made up my mind and I said, okay, guys, if this is what you want me to do, let's get the show on the road. And it was only a matter of weeks, a couple of weeks then, and everything began to happen. So, you know, it's still up to the person what they want to do. You have free will. And like you always have your testing time. You're not forced into anything. But you didn't have a very long testing time, it doesn't sound like.
Not at all. It was more of a, you committed to this, you really need to follow through on your contract. And, the book sat in the drawer for a couple of years, but then it was, all right, it's time to move on. And I was moved to talk to my friend in Sedona. And he said the words that I needed to hear, which were, move along. You got to get this project going.
But, you know, now, time is moving faster now.
Much faster.
But it
now.
Was like, I guess the rest of the world had to catch up with me because I was way ahead of my time.
Absolutely. Well, you're a pioneer. You're a pioneer along with Ruth Montgomery, along with Shirley MacLaine and the others who came before. You made it easy. You made it easy for me.
Well, you know, I think we have up to 45 authors now and more growing, and we have books scheduled way into 2010. So who would have thought that when I started my company or anything? But, you know, we're reaching all over the world now. And I said to me, it's like it became alive. It was a living thing. And it took on a life of its own. And that's why it's just, you know, spreading all over the world because it has a life of its own.
I know exactly what you mean. There's no stopping it.
Mm-hmm.
You're on the train and it's going down the track. You can't get off. You're on.
Yeah, and you know, the books are all over the world now. So who would have thought that when I started out? But that's the way these things happen.
It's amazing.
But, you know, I get hundreds and hundreds of submissions. And I sit here at night watching TV reading all these manuscripts. And I do read every one of them. I always tell people that. when they're going to send something in. I said, well, it could take as long as 6 months to even be read because it has to go in the stack and it's ready in order. But I sit here and I read every single one of them, and then I make the decisions. And the ones I know that stand out, and I think, and this is good, well, they're the ones that we decide to publish. So it's not an easy job anyway.
No, I can only imagine all of those submissions. And I think that's one of the reasons why I wasn't really quite sure if it was on the up and up when you were calling me about the book, because it was past the six-month period. And I thought, well, you know, that's it. Okay, I tried. And I was thinking about maybe self-publishing. I wasn't sure. And then the phone call came from you, and everything just fell into place.
Well, it probably might have gone past the time because I was traveling all over the world during that time. And that kind of slowed my reading response time down.
I'm sure.
But some people will email us and they'll say, I don't want to wait 6 months. My baby's ready to be born now. He said, push it up to the top of the stack. Well, that's not fair to everybody else that submits things.
No.
You have to go in order.
That's right. If it's meant to be, it's meant to be.
Yeah, that's what I say.
The timing will be right.
Yeah, if it's supposed to be, it will happen. But, you know, I just rely on, I don't know what you call gut instinct, or maybe them, you know, the guides and everything will tell me which ones they think are the ones that need to come out. And I've had pretty good luck with the authors we picked.
Well,
you're going to meet a lot of them at the conference because they'll be there and you'll get to know each other.
Actually, I've been emailing back and forth with a couple of them. I've been making friends online.
Uh-huh.
With the authors.
Okay. Well, now we know about you. You're from the corporate world, and this is something you would have not thought you were going to get into anyway.
Tried not to.
Do you have a family?
I do. I have a husband. My husband and I live in Orlando, Florida. And I have two sisters and a brother who are in New York. My niece Lauren just recently moved in with my husband and I here in Orlando, and I have a lot of extended family all across the United States.
Mm-hmm. What does your husband think of this new venture?
Well, I think he's very excited for me. He has not read the book yet. He said he doesn't want to look at the manuscript. He wants the actual book in his hand.
Oh, okay, but at least he's willing to read it.
Yes. He is willing to read it, and I believe right now he's in the other room listening to the radio.
Because a lot of husbands, you know, they don't want to be involved in this because their crazy wife could ruin them. You know?
Well, when we first started dating, I told him all about what I was doing. I told him about automatic writing. I told him about the channeling so he could get out if he wanted to.
Uh-huh.
He didn't go.
Well, there must have been something there that made him want to stay anyway. Okay, but now we're going to talk about the book. And you were talking about your guide. How did you discover your guide?
Well,
you said Jeremy, I think his name was.
Jeremy is one of the two guys that have been with me since birth.
Uh-huh.
And he's the lead guide. He's in charge of the book project.
Well, how did you discover him?
I discovered him, well, how do I explain this? Driving along in my car, whenever I was alone, I would start to hear messages in my head. They came, it wasn't like a conversation, but more like a thought bubble. Like if you picture a comic strip and the words above the character, like that, I would all of a sudden have these thought bubbles in my head about important things. It was, you know, information that would help me grow spiritually, things that I should be doing. And then I noticed that in the shower I was starting to get these thought bubbles too. And then I realized whenever I'm alone, this is where this is starting to happen. And then when I was in the psychic development class, one of the things that we talked about were guides, and I started to learn a little bit more about them. And when I started to do the automatic writing, and I got very tired of drawing all these circles all the time, I called on my teacher, and I said, you know, what should I do? I'm just getting these circles. And she said, well, you need to ask who's trying to come through and then ask for a message. So when I did that, then the very first word that formed was Jeremy. And that's how I was introduced to Jeremy, and then he started to write with me every day. And I wrote, I used to get up very early in the morning so that I could write before I went to work.
When you're alone, that way.
When I'm alone, yeah. My husband would go to work, and I would sit there. I would meditate for a few minutes, and then I would pull out my pen and paper and get going. Once I made the connection, it was very easy to continue.
Well, a lot of people I know who have done automatic writing say in the beginning, it's a lot of nonsense that comes through.
Yeah, I didn't get the nonsense. I got the circles. Many circles and many little drawings and that kind of thing. But once I was firm about it and said, I need to know who I'm talking to. You should always know who you're talking to if you're doing automatic writing.
Yeah.
And do you have a message for me? Because, you know, these circles are kind of cool, but I need a little bit more. It just started to flow. And after Jeremy, Alexa Porath is another guide that I wrote with frequently. He's part of the book guide group. And then other guides came through, one named Charles, one named Selena. A lot of different guides came through with different information, different wisdom that they wanted to impart.
Yeah, I know in the book you call it GG.
Yes.
So is that what you mean by your guide group?
Yes, that's the guide group. I call them the GG, and they are made up. And this is another reason why I was kind of afraid to come out of the closet on this. When my family hears who makes up this guide group, I think they're going to have a hard time believing it. I think it's very easy to believe in guides named Alexa Porath or Selena, but when they find out that Grandma Knapp, Aunt Gracie, and Cousin Linda, relatives who are on the other side of the veil, are also part of this guide group, and that actually my grandmother is the spokes guide for this guide group, I think they're going to have a little bit of a hard time with it. We'll see. We'll see.
Okay, because, that's the thing. But, you know, in my work, I found that sometimes if the relative that passes over, if they're very close to you, they will request to be a guide from the other side.
Ah, okay.
And that way they can stay involved with the person's life. And if there's no necessity of them coming back right away or reincarnating, sometimes they're allowed to be a guide. So it makes sense to me anyway.
Well, that's one. That's good. I got to start.
Okay. Well, the woman I had on last week, you'll meet her at the conference, was Karen Peebles.
Mm-hmm.
And it just began coming through her mind. And she's just a housewife with a mother, you know, mother and children and everything. And hers was her Uncle George.
Oh.
Who had committed suicide.
Okay.
Oh, something like 20-something years before, and all of a sudden he began coming through her. And she wrote the book about suicide and what happens once you commit suicide and go to the other side. And it's really a very wonderful book, and it's full of great love. And that's why I wanted to publish it, to show people they're not condemned. They are not, like the Catholic Church says, they're doomed for hellfire and go to purgatory. None of that happens.
Oh, no, that's not true.
It's not true at all. I found that in my work, too. But her book, I mean, it totally astounded her, too, that her uncle is talking through her, and she's writing down what he's dictating. But so
exactly.
It can be a relative, I guess.
Yeah. I was surprised. I didn't realize that relatives would be part of the group, but there they were. And doing it on the computer and with my grandmother as the quote-unquote spokes guide, it was almost like being in a chat room with her online.
Okay.
That's what it felt like.
Uh-huh. Right. But then did it come through in any kind of order, or did you just have to arrange it at later?
No order at all. In fact, the stuff that's in the book came through with personal messages that aren't included in the book. I had to take all of the different subjects. I cut it up into little pieces of paper, like in individual paragraphs.
Yeah.
And then I categorized them by subject and tried to put them in some kind of order that would make sense for the reader in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then I interspersed in between the channeling from the guides comments and experiences that I had that the guide group or the GG wanted me to use to make their point.
To explain things.
Right, how to explain things. So that people would see would get their point, get the message, and see how easy it is to spot these things.
Yeah. Well, see, that's why when I publish these books, I look for things that I know, you know, because this is the same things I've written about. And it's amazing how we're getting the same information from so many different ways, you know, channeling, automatic writing, and mine is with hypnosis, but it's all the same information. And to me, that it means it has to be true. Otherwise, we'd have a lot of contradiction out there.
I agree.
And that doesn't happen, you know.
I had never read your books until last summer. And then I sat down with the Convoluted Universe series, and I was shocked at how similar it was to what came through to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was so similar.
Well, that's the more complicated ones, but, you know, my book about life after death, you know, Between Death and Life.
I read that first.
Okay, that has a lot of the basic things in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into the more complicated things later.
Yeah, it was fascinating, though.
But, yeah, because everything that I get and everything that is submitted to us, it's all the same information. And if I do thousands and thousands of people, you know, in my hypnosis work, and they're all saying the same thing without knowing what anybody else has said, you know, there has to be truth to this.
There has to be some truth there, absolutely, that's trying to get out.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't matter what the church says, that they can't deny these things. And, you know, I'm not against the church. I figure if people, you can have both, really, if you want it. But there's just more information once you start getting into metaphysics.
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the things that made me reach out and start to go on my personal search for the truth, I was brought up Catholic, and my first husband, was, his family went to a Baptist church.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to go to that church with his family. In my mind, what did it matter what church I went to? There's one God, and what does it matter which church you're sitting in on Sunday or Wednesday night?
Yeah.
And as I was sitting in church, the pastor started to talk about idolatry and saying that if you wore a crucifix around your neck, that was idolatry. If you had statues of the Virgin Mary in your house, that was idolatry, and your next stop was going to be hell. And I thought, oh, wait a minute. I have those crosses. My family is all Catholic. They have those kinds of statues. Is everybody that I'm related to going to hell? And it was really kind of scary. And then one day he was talking about the fact that there was no such thing as evolution, that dinosaur bones were just something that were planted in the ground by Satan to lead us all into damnation.
Oh, boy.
And afterwards, I waited until after that sermon, and I went to talk to him, and I said, I just want to get this straight. Is this really what you're saying? And that made me really think and reconsider what was being said in regular church.
Yeah.
And I thought, I have to kind of go out and try and find the truth. What is the truth?
Yeah, that's it. But I tell people, your truth may not be my truth, but at least it'll be yours.
Absolutely.
But I encourage people to ask lots and lots of questions and decide for themselves.
Yes.
That's the important thing. But I went through the same path. I used to teach Sunday school, so I went through all of that, you know. And you try, but I would sit there in the congregation, listen to the sermon, and I kept wanting to raise my hand and say, but maybe that means this instead of what they were saying, you know?
I wanted to do the same thing, and I kept my mouth shut and waited until after, but many times I wanted to stand up and say, wait a second, have you considered this?
Yeah, but, you know, you can't do it. So I said, being a good little Christian girl, I couldn't do that. So it finally got to the point that I just couldn't stay in the church because there was just too much that I wanted to know, too many questions.
Exactly.
And they didn't have the answers.
Yeah.
But, you know, if people are happy there, that's fine. That's where they are and where they're supposed to be.
Absolutely. Everyone's in a different place at a different time. You're where you belong in order for you to learn the lessons that you need to learn and for your own spiritual growth.
But then if they get to the point, they begin to ask questions, there's a whole other world out there for them.
Moving up a level.
So we're not supposed to try to convert anybody. We just offer the information and make people think. That's the main thing.
One of the biggest points that the guide group made in writing this book is that you should never stand on the corner and preach to people. What you should do is live your beliefs and be a role model for people in your beliefs and let people ask you questions and then answer the questions.
Yeah, that's what they told me, that if you try to, come on with something they don't understand, it'll just go over their head. So there's no sense in doing that. You just wait until they ask you. I always say drop little crumbs.
Exactly.
And see if they pick them up. Don't give them the whole loaf of bread, you know.
When they're ready, they'll ask questions. They'll ask more questions as they're ready for each
well,
higher level.
Even in the Bible, Jesus said, don't cast your pearls before swine. And he didn't mean they were pigs. He just meant that they would not understand the value. And so that's the thing. When they're ready, they'll ask questions, and there's a whole other world out there. But, I noticed one of the things you've written about is reincarnation and karma.
Yes.
But there's another part here that I would like you to discuss. You talk about, these windows of opportunity. First, let's go into that before we get this other part. Explain what the windows of opportunity are.
Okay, to explain windows of opportunity, the way that this goes, we sit down, before we come into this lifetime or any lifetime, we sit down to plan our upcoming incarnation.
Yes.
It's kind of like sitting around a conference table. We come to that table with almost a laundry list of the things that we want to do in this upcoming lifetime, a list of the karmic debts that we want to repay, how we want to do it, the experiences that we want to have for growth and learning. And around this table with us, we have almost like a planning committee. We have our teachers, our guides, our loved ones, people that we're going to incarnate with, most likely our future parents, brothers, sisters, the people that we're going to interact with. And when we sit down to plan this incarnation, we basically write an outline for a book complete with chapters.
We come in with our plan of what we hope we're going to do.
It's almost like a business plan, Dolores. This is why I can understand it's very business-like. We create a lifetime of opportunities so that we can accomplish the things that we want to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And those opportunities, those are what I call, or what the GG calls, really, are windows of opportunity for learning and growth. Now, they can be nice, easy, gentle windows, or they can be very difficult windows. It depends. And they're specifically set into our lifetime so that we can repay the karmic debt or to achieve specific learning goals. But if we miss a window, it's okay. It's all right, because we've created a lot of windows to learn this particular lesson. They're spaced out over the course of our lifetime. Each window gets a little bit more in your face and a little bit more dramatic than the previous one, but they continue to pop up until you get the message. The thing about these windows is that if you're having a lot of these windows, it's because there's a lesson that you really, really, really want to learn, or some kind of debt that you want to repay, and you just want to get it done in this lifetime. So you've enabled yourself to do it. You think that you're going to learn early on. You think that you're going to spot the window. Things are very easy in the planning stage when we're on the other side of the veil.
Well, they
things
always look easy over there, yeah.
Yes. Very easy. And we think, oh, I'm going to know that right away. I've learned so much. I'm going to spot this. It's going to be easy. But
now, this
what
will be
I,
my last time around. I can do it. It's no problem. No big deal.
Yeah. I'm awake. We're always so awake on the other side. One of the things that the guide group says is kind of picture a high rise, and your life is the elevator in the high rise. And if you recognize the window of opportunity when you're on the first or the second floor, learning that lesson is much, much easier than if you go all the way up to the penthouse to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the earlier you spot the windows, the better off you're going to be, because you save yourself a lot of pain and a lot of drama.
Well, see, in my work, too, I work as a therapist. I work with lots of people, and they have so many problems, and they keep repeating the same mistakes over and over again, drawing the same kind of people into their lives. And they don't even realize it, that they are doing this themselves. And until they figure it out, hey, this is what I'm trying to learn, they're not going to move onward. But too many people set up these things just in repetition and making the same mistakes.
The life scripts. That's the easiest way to spot a window. Look for life scripts. is the same kind of unpleasant event happening over and over. I had a nephew who had countless car accidents, little fender benders all the time. There was something there for him to learn, and when he finally learned it, he stopped having the accidents.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people break up with a significant other only to end up with somebody who's basically the same person, just with a different face.
Yeah, those are the ones that I run into. The same kind of person, and they're not good for them, but they just keep drawing the same kind of person to them again and again.
I did it over and over and over again until I finally recognized it for what it was, and I didn't recognize it on my own. It was shown to me when I was working on this book.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a little thing with control freaks, but finally woke up. And
well, I tell people, then when you finally understand it, then you can go on to the next lesson, which may or may not be easier. It might be harder, but at least it'll be a different lesson.
But you're making progress that way.
Yeah, that's the only way you can do it. Otherwise, you're stuck in a rut.
Right.
But let's give an example of some of these windows of opportunity. I was trying to think, you had here about, is that enemies or our closest universal friends? I'm trying to read from this.
That's relationship villains.
Things like that. Tell us.
Yeah,
that's right. We had on here the relationship villains. Talk about those.
Well, generally, the people that we think did us wrong, the people that we may not like so much, that we might consider to be our enemies, those are people that more than likely are our closest universal friends.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who appears to be the bad guy or the bad girl in our life probably loves us the most, because the people who love us the most, the ones that we're closest to, they're the ones that are willing to make the ultimate sacrifice and play the role of a villain to help us make sure that we learn the lessons that we set out to learn. Anybody, Dolores, can be the good guy, anybody. But it takes somebody who really cares about us to play the part of, say a drunk driver who causes us great pain. If that's what it takes us to learn the lesson, if it takes being hit by a drunk driver, if it takes horrible accidents, then the people who love us the most are going to take on that role of relationship villain and keep us on our path, make sure that we are doing what we need to do to complete the things on our to-do list.
Well, I found that they will give, you know who I'm talking about, but they,
mm-hmm, I do.
They will give subtle hints at first.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get that, then it gets a little more obvious until they said finally they have to hit you up the side of the head. You're
absolutely
not going to pay attention.
It's in your face. I started out, I'm going to use the example of a relationship villain in my life that's a romantic relationship villain, because I think a lot of people can probably relate to that. When I started out with my first relationship villain, I have a history of control freaks, because one of the things that I've had to learn is to take my own power and to learn how to communicate with people. What I have a tendency to do, or had a tendency to do, was to just let things simmer, and then explode and walk away.
Yeah.
And never have conversations about things. And early on, it was things like, oh, you're not allowed to buy Wonder Bread, you have to buy the store-bought brand. And that would aggravate me, but I would buy the store-bought brand, and I wouldn't say anything about it. And that relationship, a few things like that, and I blew up, and that was the end. I just walked away.
Yeah.
Next relationship, kind of the same thing, but more in my face. And then I had the relationship that totally woke me up. And I think, in retrospect, that I was very close to becoming a battered woman. All the classic signs were there. He tried to separate me from my family. He tried to separate me from my friends.
Yeah.
He tried to get me to quit work. He certainly didn't want me involved in any of the stuff that I'm doing right now. He tried everything he could to get me away from that. And that really blew up. It came to an end one day when he pushed me against the wall and actually spit in my face.
Hmm.
And the business part of me was thinking at that moment, what's the protocol for this? I really don't know what to do right now. But when he did that, I knew that was just the end of that relationship. I totally ended that relationship. And then in working on the book, what I learned was that this guy, and I have a lot of trouble, I understand it. I understand it on a soul level, Dolores.
Yeah, but
it's
not
very
on the,
hard.
But not on the conscious level.
It's hard. I'm still a human being. It's very hard. That this is one of my closest universal friends who was going to make sure for me that I had the opportunity to learn the lesson that I wanted to learn, and he just slapped me in the face so that I would learn this lesson. Mm-hmm. And I did learn it, thank goodness, because my guide group says it's a good thing, because what I had planned for myself next would make this guy look like a walk in the park.
Mm. But look how many people out there who don't realize this, and they stay stuck in these kind of relationships.
I didn't realize until this material was dictated that I had a life script. I never would have believed that I was living different life scripts.
Well, one case I always like to say is one of the clients that I had. He was a man, and he said when he was younger, he was in a busy city. I don't know if it was New York or somewhere. Anyway, he was mugged on the street, and these three guys dragged him into an alleyway, and they stabbed him, oh, it was like 7 different times, and he was able to crawl out to the sidewalk, and somebody found him and took him to the hospital. Otherwise, he would have died. I mean, it was really horrible. And he spent a long time in the hospital, and he said, why in the world did something like that happen? Well, during the session, I'm always able to find the answers, and they said, oh, that was just some of his friends that volunteered to help him. And I said, friends? I said, who needs friends like that? But they were there in case you got off your path. They were going to bring you back on it in one way or another. There's easier ways, but apparently he hadn't got the message, so it had to be something like that.
Right.
Because during his time in the hospital, he turned his whole life around. So sometimes it takes something like that to really shake you up.
It does.
But it was interesting. They said, oh, there was just some friends that volunteered to help him.
That's exactly the relationship villain concept.
Uh-huh. But on a conscious level, we would never think that.
No, not at all. And you know, knowing something doesn't necessarily make it easier to digest. You know, this person that I'm telling you about, the one that kind of shook me awake there, I had to see him almost on a daily basis because we worked in the same place.
Well, that's
and,
not good.
Oh, no, it was terrible. And he kept calling me and wanting to talk to me, and I didn't want to talk to him at all. And finally I said, okay, fine. You know, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to talk to you. And he apologized to me, and he told me some of the things that he had learned from the relationship. And after we had that talk, that chat, he got a job someplace else, and I never had to see him again.
That part was over.
That part was over.
The lesson was learned.
Yep, and time to move on. He learned, I learned, but again, hard to look at him every day.
Mm-hmm. But now, then once it's over, then you move on to something else.
Yeah, exactly. Move on to another life script, I guess, until you recognize the windows of opportunity and jump through it.
Is what?
Recognize the windows of another set of windows of opportunity and go through it. I'm done with the relationship stuff, and now I'm on to other things.
Yeah, go ahead.
Which other windows am I going through?
Yeah, which ones do you want to talk about?
I think maybe we should talk about reincarnation a little bit.
Well, you can. I've talked a lot about it on the show, but. Go ahead and give your version anyway.
Well, I got some interesting information from the guide group that you might be interested in.
Okay.
They're talking about the United States as being Atlantis reborn. Have you gotten that?
Well, I know that the country itself has karma, and all the countries have karma that they're paying out with each other. And so they are all going, it's just like a person, they're going through an entire thing. The only thing I have about Atlantis is that many people who are alive today were there when Atlantis went down.
Yes.
And they were responsible for the misuse of the mind and misuse of the mind power. So we've come back now to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm getting, that many, many of the baby boomers are Atlanteans who are here to work out this group karmic debt and to get some healing from it, that they want to develop and succeed without being egocentric this time, without causing damage to the planet, to prove that they learned their lesson after destroying Atlantis. And an interesting thing that they said is that Gore and Bush, that presidential race, was very much a temperature taking for this group to see how they were progressing. to see if as a group they would go through that window of opportunity.
Well, in my books on Nostradamus, you know, Gore should have been the president. It wasn't supposed to be Bush.
That's what I've heard.
And look at what a different world it would have been if we'd gone that way.
Oh, yeah. I Al Gore, I mean, he's so into thinking about things on a global level, caring about the environment.
Yeah.
Completely different from Bush. But in the same breath, what the guide group also is saying is that Bush is very much a relationship villain on a global level, because it took a while, but he helped the baby boomer Atlanteans to see that war is passé and that it's time for more peaceful global mm-hmm. foreign policy. He called attention to the negative effects of bullying, basically, because he bullied entire nations.
Oh, yeah. And now it's when I think it's different now. We have a new president that is going the opposite direction, and everything is finally turning around.
According to my guide group, they're saying that Obama is going to allow this group to complete their group learning by proving that they can have accomplishments without destruction.
Mm-hmm.
If Gore couldn't do it, then Obama now is going to do it.
Well, just a few days ago, I had a session with a client, and they said Obama was a light bringer.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So you can feel that. He is definitely, if they just give him the chance, he is definitely going to change things. And it's time, it's the time in history right now to move away from the darkness and all those other things that have been happening.
Oh, it is. And, uh-huh. you know, every single one of us can bring more light to the planet. It's not that hard to do.
Because everything is changing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you want to talk about that or not. I've also talked about that because I've written
2012?
About it.
2012? Are you thinking 2012?
Well, the shifting, the vibrations and the frequency, the way they're changing of the world, how we're moving into a new dimension.
Well, I'm seeing a lot on TV now all of a sudden about 2012, and people are thinking, oh, this destruction, and oh, the end of the world. 2012,
no.
It's the end of the Mayan calendar. It's not the end of the world.
It's not. I've written about it, and I've lectured on it. This is what everybody wants to hear about everywhere I lecture all over the world, and it is not the end of the world.
No.
I don't care what the TV shows say.
No, and it just freaks people out when they hear that.
Well, they've told me it is the end of civilization as you know it. But that means we're going into a much more wonderful thing, and it changes. Very dramatic changes are going to happen, and that the old will be left behind as we move into the new.
2012, the way I understand it, is about freedom. Freedom from the dark and freedom for us to start to live wholly in the light.
Mm-hmm.
And the more light we bring to the planet, the higher our individual vibrations are going to become, and the higher the vibrational level of the entire planet. The more light that we can bring to the planet now, the easier it's going to be for our planet to shift to the fifth dimension.
That's what's happening now is when I tell people. It started about 2003 as the vibrations and the frequencies began, because we have to move it into another dimension. But the body cannot take a sudden shift in the frequencies. It'd be too much, it would destroy the body. So they said it has to be done gradually. And so you will feel the actual changes in the body as it's going through the shift in the vibrations and the frequencies. And it'll go on for a while. And I've had people talk about physical effects, and they go to the doctor and they can't find anything wrong. But then they'll level out and they'll be fine for several months, and it'll start in again. That's because the body has to adapt gradually as it moves through these adjusting to the frequency changes.
I think that's
what you got too, haven't you?
Absolutely. I agree with you. Everything that I've gotten agrees with what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that I would just love for people to know is that once we make this shift, the incarnations are going to be so much easier. We're not going to have pain and suffering to learn our lessons. We're going to have great new bodies that they're calling the light body. And you know more about this than I do, the new bodies that we're
going to have. Yeah, I've been writing about it for years.
Yeah.
That's what I like. It would you agree with the things I've found, so I know we're on the right page, you know?
Yeah, and we never heard of each other before I sent you my book, so.
Yeah, that's what I mean. When I see this, I say, well, it's coming from another source, but it's the same information.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the body is going through changes. Have you gotten some of the changes that are happening to the body?
No, I haven't had a lot about actual changes to the body. I've gotten more about how to raise your individual vibration,
okay.
And then how that will affect the planet as a whole.
Okay. Because what I've been finding is like high blood pressure and heart palpitations, depression, aches and pains in the joints and the muscles, and those kind of things will happen, but they'll only be for just like maybe a few days or so, and then it'll level off.
Now that you're saying that, you're jogging my memory, there is something that I personally noticed and asked the guides about, and I checked with different friends and people that I know, and they're kind of experiencing the same thing, and that's a propensity towards crying a lot more, becoming much more sentimental and watching a TV commercial and breaking out in tears. And
yeah.
Just that, you know, going that way. And they say that that's part of the raising of the vibration. So that is one thing that I've noticed.
Mm-hmm. And I notice you have here about the evolution and the vegetarianism. See, this is one thing. Everybody that comes to me wants to know about their diet, and they're always given the same information over and over and over again. And you say what you've got, and I'll say what I've found.
Well,
about the diet.
You know, I'm a big believer in free will, so when it comes to being a practicing vegetarian, and I have been for well over 20 years, I try not to be preachy about it. I try not to say anything, but I'll tell you, when I see people eating meat, I just want to break down and cry. I do. And my guide group tells me that vegetarianism is the way of the future. And it was very funny when the guide group started dictating about that, because when I first became a vegetarian, my grandmother was so totally against it. She told my husband at the time, "Don't you worry, I'm still going to cook for you. You're not going to have to eat that crazy food she's making." And then she's dictating stuff for this book, and she says, "Oh, vegetarianism is the way of the future." Okay, Grandma, things are always easier on the other side, I know.
Well, see, that's what I found. They always say, they said the best food for anybody is live foods, and that means fresh fruits and vegetables.
Yes.
And especially when we're shifting into this new dimension, they said you don't want to eat heavy foods, like heavy meats, because that'll hold you down. In order to move into the new dimension, you have to become lighter.
This means
lighter food. So you can't eat the heavy meats, and they're not good for you anyway with the additives. Well, they told me, though, you can have some chicken or fish,
mm-hmm.
just not a lot of heavy things.
Well,
to
then
stay
you
away
probably
from,
free what? Range, right?
The what?
Free range.
Yeah, the organic if possible.
Yes.
And they say to stay away from sugar and drink lots and lots and lots of water. They said water is unbelievable in the value it has for the body.
Yes.
But eventually, they said, as we go through this, we'll be turning into liquid diets.
That's my understanding also.
And some people have been telling me that at lectures. They said, well, you know, I've been making a lot of these smoothies and these vegetable drinks, and that's the way it's going to be because the body won't need that much. And they also said not to eat heavy meals, but to eat small meals all during the day. They call it grazing.
Yes.
And they said that gives the body more room for the energy to flow when you don't have a whole lot of food, you know, all at one time.
I've heard the same things. I've had that come through as well.
So we're getting the same information. And I'm watching the clock.
Okay.
And, you know, people always say, "You mean an hour has passed already?" That's how fast
so
it goes.
I have so much more I want to say.
Some of them, yeah, I know, but save it for the conference anyway.
I will.
But some people, I won't be interrupting you that much then, but some people come on the show and they say, "I can't talk for an hour." I said, "Believe me, it goes very fast." But
it did.
When you're
I can't
doing,
believe it's over.
When you're doing your lecture, you'll be able to talk without me interrupting you anyway.
I don't recall you doing that much talking. I think I was doing most of the talking. I'm sorry.
I think we're okay, but if people want to contact you, how do you want them to do it?
They can contact me through my website, which is www.sherry, Sherri, Cortland, Cortland.com.
.com. You don't have an ad or anything.
No.
Well, that email is your ad. That's right, .com. So it's Sherri Courtland, SHERRICORTLAND.net.
No.
And her book is called Windows of Opportunity, and it will be out in a few months anyway after the conference. But the conference is the June the 12th to the 14th in Bentonville, Arkansas. It's the fourth transformational conference, and our keynote speaker is Helen Reddy, the Helen Reddy. And we've got a lot of other wonderful speakers. So if anybody wants information about the conference, go to our website, and you can get plenty of information there. The website is Ozark Mountain, the name of my company, but it's abbreviated, OZARKMT.com, and you'll be able to get all the information you need. Now I'm going to have to sign off, or they're going to pull the plug. Thanks a lot, Sherri, for being on the show tonight.
Thank you for having me on the show. I look forward to seeing you next month.
Okay.